Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Chad Markwitz. We are your hosts for this weekend's edition. On this weekend show, we're going to do our best to recap really the trading in the metals and the markets that happened throughout last month, the month of May, and look ahead to some of the key drivers for, let's say, this month and the second half of the year. We're kicking off the show with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. This is our end of the month, monthly call where we recap some of the monthly moves and get Doc's assessment for where he sees markets going, metals and markets going next month, as well as throughout the rest of this year. Doc, I know a lot of our listeners want us to start with the precious metals, so we will start with gold. Look, gold down again this month, 2 months in a row that gold has been down. It still is, for the most part, about flat on the year. Now it's actually a little bit down on the year, but quite frankly, gold is, I guess, hanging in there in a sense. But fact of the matter is, we've seen a lot of pressure on the stocks. Before we get into the stocks, Doc, let's talk about gold. Close the month right around that 18, let's say 40 level, a little under 1840. What's your assessment of where gold goes from here?
Well, Corey, I think that gold could kind of, for another week or two, just hang around at this point. It may move up a little bit more. If we close up around where we are this week, that's 2 weeks where we've had two closing highs. So if we get a third one, and then that starts to put it at risk. But on the weekly chart, kind of shows that gold may just move sideways here for a couple of weeks until the 26-week moving average catches up with the 16 or the 12-week moving average, and then for gold to maybe start down again. But right now, it's kind of into a little trading range of its own here. And it could last that way for a little while.
Well, Doc, we were talking a little bit before we started recording today, and you could see gold in the medium term heading down maybe into the 1700s. So my question would be, there's very strong support at 1780, and that was one of those higher lows on the longer term bull. And then there's a low underneath that, a higher low at 1721. Do you think either of those levels are within threat of being broken to the downside should this correction last longer than people think?
Yeah, I think, and I've said this before, that when we've, on a monthly chart, when we've had this long a correction, it is so unusual for it not to challenge the lower Bollinger Band. And if you look at the monthly chart, we have finally moved into a beautiful sideways trading range. And currently, the lower Bollinger Band is right around 1700. And if you look at the ADX, which is a strength indicator, the black line moved up recently, and now it's starting to move a little laterally, and it could start moving down gently again. But the red line, which is a bearish line, and the green line are last month trended toward each other, and we could have 1 month like that again where they would trend toward each other and actually end up in apposition to each other, where they're touching for the first time in months. So June could be a tough month yet for gold, even though we might start out the month where we're moving a little sideways for the first 2 weeks.
Doc, quick comment on the stocks then. We're seeing GDX, GDXJ, they sold off at the end of today, rebounded in the last hour, but they closed the week fairly weakly. And look, again, we are seeing pressure on the stocks. What's newer about this pressure on the stocks is that we're also seeing it hit some of the larger miners, because the larger miners earlier this year were still doing quite well. Now it seems like weakness is across the board in the stocks. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, you know, that doesn't surprise me because, you, as you're well aware, and if you listen to Kitco, as you're aware, everybody talks about how undervalued or how cheap they say that the junior miners are, and they are. And, you know, and the mid-tiers are starting to break down more. So, you know, eventually it's got to affect these large cap companies, and you're starting to see that. And you're totally correct about GDX and GDXJ. Not a good sign today the way they finished the day, because it looks like they're going to start to move down here again. And that seems to always predate the actual metal move. And if you look at the weekly chart on GDX and GDXJ, they are in a trend down, and it'll be interesting if they can, especially GDX, bottom at about 30 again and then hold its own. But that's going to be a multiple time if they do, where they are challenging the 200-week moving average. And I'll tell you what, if GDX takes that out and closes below it a couple of weeks, GDX is in trouble then. So that's what we're going to find out during June, whether the 200-week moving average can hold again.
Well, Doc, do you feel that some of the move down that we've seen in the miners, since it's been so much more extreme than the metals, and we normally see that outperformance both to the upside and downside in miners, but do you think they were already anticipating the move down we were going to see in the metals and that most of the damage has been inflicted? Or do you still see there being a potential for a lot of these mining stocks to even slide further, specifically the juniors? They're already pretty beat up. Could they go lower?
Some of the juniors could actually go a little bit lower yet. I think they have probably one more little downside, and we were talking off mic about that. And you take some of these and you say 10 or 20%, which seems like a lot, but they're so low now, you're talking about pennies. But that could happen once again. And if it does, that means the mid-tier most likely and the high-cap stocks are going to break down too. And then it's a matter of them breaking down to the point where then this carnage is over. And you can bet that for some of these companies, it's going to be a great buying opportunity.
Yeah, some of these stocks, they're approaching cash in the bank valuations, which I know seems cheap, but we have actually seen stocks, again, trade for under cash in the bank. I don't think we're quite in that environment yet, but hopefully we don't get there. Doc, quick question regarding a pretty major M&A transaction that was announced just today as we're recording this later in the day on Tuesday. Goldfields acquiring Yamana. I know you're a shareholder of one of those companies. This is just another example of two majors combining in the sector. It's hard to really decipher if this is good or bad for the sector, especially for the juniors, because we haven't seen any money trickle down to the juniors. So I guess that kind of makes it neutral at best. But what's your takeaway from that transaction and this general trend of majors combining with majors?
Yeah, a while back I bought some Yamana again. I had sold my position when it took off a long time ago, and I bought back just a little bit, and that kind of surprised me. And we talked about this, I would have thought maybe Yamana would have purchased Goldfields. As usual, the purchaser just got crushed today. Goldfields is down almost $3. And I actually like that, because if it keeps breaking down, then I'll buy Goldfields, although the Yamana debt situation is questionable. And I own Goldfields quite a while ago. But Goldfields is finally starting to look attractive again. But it did surprise me, because I thought maybe it would be the other way around, where Yamana would purchase Goldfield.
Well, Doc, as far as mergers and acquisitions in the mining space, many people have claimed really for over a decade, since 2010 and 2011, when it got so frothy, that there needs to be more consolidation in the space. And to Corey's point, we've only really seen it in the largest companies. The big boys have combined both in the gold and silver space, a little bit in the royalty space, but we're not really seeing those 3 to 4 dozen mid-tier producers, or maybe the other dozen mid-tier producers in silver, going out and making acquisitions, either those one-off small producers that have, you know, one mine, maybe two mines, or the large development plays that have millions of ounces of gold in the ground, or maybe 100 million ounces of silver in the ground. There are those companies that have been sitting out there on the market some of them since last cycle. Do you think we'll start seeing more M&A like that? And would that, in your mind, mark a bottom in the sector, or would that be more of an encouragement that the bull move is on?
I think that you may actually see more of what just happened with Goldfield and Yamana by these companies before they start looking at some of the smaller companies, because it might help them from an efficiency standpoint first. Then I think they could look at some of the other ones, because at least by merging like they are, they know they have a higher level of assets. And I think that's what they're desperate for. Whereas with some of the smaller ones, they're not so sure, and they would have to spend greater dollars to acquire those assets over time. So I think you could see a lot more of these type of mergers first, just because of the fact that due to the dwindling gold assets out there, that they want to do it by merger first and through acquirement. And then they'll look, I think, more at the other ones after that period of time.
One thing I'm curious to see is how these majors, as they have merged, treat these non-core assets. Because, look, these companies are sitting on millions of ounces that are non-core and are getting no value as metals prices move higher. And who knows, maybe as there are some synergies, maybe companies are looking at these ounces as the next production ounces. Again, that's just a complete guess on my point. But unfortunately, we just have not seen the money filtering down into the juniors, and the juniors keep dropping. Doc, are there any stocks that you are watching very closely as a barometer for when stuff might turn, or any stocks that you actually think are getting cheap? Because I have seen you comment on the blog that you've been doing some nibbling, but I do understand that nibbling is very small allocations.
Yeah, I still think that this year is just going to be a very lousy year for everything, for the conventional market, for the precious metals, and now I think uranium could get hit even harder, and some of the commodities. Which I think, even though they may correct to a level higher than they were, because they may be in a major bull run that could last a number of years. But one stock, you know, I really look at as barometer now is Hecla, because they're a big company, they're fairly well run, and that company to me is now flirting with moving lower on the monthly chart. It may be a gradual move lower, but that's the one that will tell me pretty much when the carnage is over. And if you look at the monthly chart, the 12 and the 26 month moving averages on the momentum indicators aren't even down to zero yet, and they're in a definite downtrend. So when Hecla bottoms, that's one company that will tell me that I better get real serious in my purchases, because that still has a way to move lower yet based on the monthly chart.
Well, thanks for sharing that outlook with us on the technicals for Hecla, Doc. I do think it's a good bellwether because it's got a nice mix of both silver and gold. It's been in business 125 years, and it's a good, solid mid-tier producer. So it should be a good bellwether, one to keep our eyes on. Let me just ask you a general question about mining stocks versus general equities, because they're all stocks, they're all equities. Do you think that we need to see a divergence between the precious metals and including the mining stocks and the general equities for them to go higher? Like, will they diverge from a crashing or at least to correcting general markets? Or do you think that the general equities will just suck the mining stocks down with them if there's any more big moves in those markets?
Afraid to say, Shad, that I think they're going to suck, especially the large cap and mid cap mining companies down with them. And we have a ways to go in the conventional market, frankly. This move higher that everybody's getting excited about, in my view, isn't going to last. We may hang around maybe a week or so, and then I think we head lower. But I think it will tend to move down. The precious metal stocks will tend to be negatively influenced by the conventional market as we go forward.
Just kind of that bear market action, right, where it hits all the markets, and it's been such an orderly start to this bear market too. Doc, before we leave the precious metals, real quick question on silver. Look, silver's holding just above, let's say, $21. but it's coming real close to having a weekly close in my eyes that is pretty devastating. The lowest weekly close that I see in almost 2 years is $21. That happened in May of this year. Again, we're at like $21.50 right now. How worrisome are we about silver leading the way lower?
I think there's a good odds that it could do that. I do not like the looks of the weekly chart or the monthly chart on silver. And I think we could move down a little bit and then just hover above the 200-week moving average. It's kind of like we talked before about another chart. And if it breaks below 200 weeks for a couple, 3 weeks, we're in deep trouble with silver. And so we've got to have it hold there. And so it's acting very suspicious right now, frankly. And it looks like this month we're going to close at the lowest close we've had in silver since about 8 months ago or 7 months. So it's a new low close. And that is not a positive thing right now for silver. Plus, the momentum in silver on the monthly chart is still above zero. And so it looks like it's going to want to move down towards zero or even sub-zero before we see the low in silver. So that means more pressure on silver, I'm afraid. I hope that's not true. But it's going to get dicey here right now. We're at a big inflection point right now for silver.
Well, then based on that, Doc, would you be more concerned about a pullback in the silver stocks over the gold stocks? And then conversely, once things bottom, would you expect the silver stocks to outperform to the upside?
That could happen, actually. And I think silver is at more risk than gold. And because I look at some of these silver stocks that I don't think have bottomed yet based on the technicals I'm seeing. So it makes sense that silver may be under more pressure than gold, and that those stocks move lower toward their double bottoms of 2020 or March of 2020. And I think that's very possible in the next 2-3 months. And I would think that would happen, by the way, because there's some really good companies that haven't reached that double bottom.
All right, Doc. So it really sounds like everything is under pressure. U.S. markets, precious metals. We've even seen base metals looking weaker. Let's talk about interest rates then, because even interest rates have pulled back a little bit. We've seen a little bounce in the bond market. We have the 10-year at about 2.84%, which is off of highs that were over 3%. Really not that long ago, just over a month ago. So a little bit more money coming into the bond market, maybe a more defensive play. Bond market moves also tie in very closely to what the Fed is doing, and the Fed is pretty much locked in 2 more 50-basis-point hikes. Where do you see interest rates and the bond market going from this level?
Well, I think we've really broken some really good support for the bond market. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of rally here pretty soon in the bond market, but I don't think it's going to hold. I think we have a lot more to move down in the bond market, frankly. I wouldn't be surprised if the bond market moves down to eventually test its 200-month moving average. And that's a little bit ways to go yet. And so I think the bond market is not done with its descent. And that, of course, fits very well into the fact that the Fed is raising rates. And I think as long as the stock market move down is orderly, and as long as the credit markets hold up fairly well, there's nothing to stop the Fed from continuing to raise rates.
Well, Doc, providing that it is more orderly as far as the corrective move in the markets and the credit markets don't get hit and they keep hiking, if interest rates were to keep rising, just normal interest rates, not just the Fed funds rate, because of bond selling off, isn't there a point where that puts the brakes on the economy, though? Because if you have interest rates rise too much, mortgage rates go up, the cost of borrowing for a car loan goes up, the cost of putting things on credit goes up, and the consumers are already getting pinched with high inflationary prices. So isn't there a point where if those rates keep ratcheting higher and higher, it puts a brake on the economy?
Absolutely. And in fact, the housing market the mean price of homes is still rising a little bit, but that really is due to the fact that those with significant amounts of money that can still afford to buy houses, whereas it's the market underneath $400,000 for homes that is starting to feel it now. And those are the homes that you're no longer seeing multiple offers or escalation clauses for. I just talked to a couple of realtors about that, and they're starting to see this thing topping for the lower end of the market, but it hasn't quite moved to the upper end of the market yet either. Now, the thing is, the only way the Fed is going to impact inflation, frankly, is they're going to have to decrease the wealth effect. And unfortunately, that means that they're going to have to impact housing, and they're going to have to impact the stock market. And we aren't even to that point yet. They're going to have to really impact how people psychologically look at these markets. So we're not even close to that yet, especially with the stock market, especially with this move higher. So like I said, as long as it appears to them to be orderly, they're going to continue to raise, because they have to impact the wealth effect. And unfortunately, that means recession, which we probably are already in, but they'll look the other way as far as that's concerned with a negative GDP.
Yeah, Doc, I think you're right. We have been saying and cautioning people, don't listen to those saying that the Fed is going to switch course next meeting or tomorrow for that matter and start injecting money into the system. This seems like the Fed is pretty stuck on hiking rates, and it's no simpler than when you pull out liquidity from the market and, quite frankly, stop with the easy money policies. Well, markets move down, and quite frankly, now it's pulling everything down. Doc, we're going to wrap it up here. I really think you have depressed enough people with this interview. I do appreciate your outlook, but boy, oh boy, this year, it's already been tough for investors, and we're not quite halfway through it. Sounds like it's going to continue to be tough for the rest of this year. Doc, I always enjoy your comments. Thank you for taking time, sharing your honest outlooks on these markets. Everybody listening on the weekend show, we're going to be right back. And everybody who listened to this on the daily editorial, please, as always, send us your comments and questions for Doc. Doc, thanks again for your time, man. Have a great rest of your week.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.